You're listening to the Art of Play podcast. This podcast is about play, not just childhood play, all play. We are going to look at different modes of play and how we can cultivate a culture of play in life to make your human experience a little more playful and a lot more productive. Welcome back to episode 3 of the Art of Play podcast. Today we have a treat. We have an awesome interview, which is our first interview from an exemplary individual who is one of the more playful people I know. He also happens to be my neighbor and a good friend. Chris Grant is an athlete in every sense of the word, minus the swagger of being a jerky jock. He's a personable example of someone always willing to make life happy and fulfilling in a really full package. He fills his life to the brim. He's a dad, he's a husband, he works, he has a job that has him traveling all over the place. But as we talk about in the interview, he has a really prioritized view for how to make the most of what you've been given and turning opportunities for play into experiences you can draw strength from later. So we'll get right into it. So why don't you tell me whatever you want to tell me about who you are?
Sure. Well, I'm the guy that lives down the street, and that's pretty much it. Husband and now father of three. I grew up in Salt Lake. I went to East High School. I'm the youngest of four. I feel like I had the greatest upbringing. I'm super close with my siblings. Still super close with both my parents. Interestingly, as we're talking about the art of play, I think one of the reasons why my family is so close, and I say my family meaning my siblings and my parents, mm-hmm. is because we played hard.
Together.
Okay. So my dad is very much a workhorse, but he's a work hard, play hard guy. And what we would do is every year in August, we would go to Newport Beach together as a family for 2 weeks, which was kind of unheard of.
That's a long time.
Yeah. But it was that time together that we had that was the most impactful part of my upbringing, and it's not even close. So it was so important to me that I used to have on my wall as a kid, a little handmade calendar that I would create, and it just said days till Newport. And I would cross off every single night next to my bed, like the number of days until our beach trip, because that's what I lived for. And so I wanted to be in the ocean. I wanted to be on the beach and wanted to be with my family. I still get a little bit of crap from the guys that I played Little League baseball with. We had a really good Little League baseball team, and we went to the regional Little League World Series. And if we would have won that, we would have gone to Williamsport and played, you know, like those are the ones broadcast on ESPN and all that stuff. But that regional World Series was during the beach trip.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
Yeah. And I went with my family on the beach trip, and I did not do the Little League World Series thing. And that was a little tough, just because, like I said, you know, I got some heat for that, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And like that time with family and that time at the beach together was so important. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't advance to the Little League World Series in Williamsport on ESPN.
Bummer, such a bummer.
Total bummer. Anyway, this is kind of long-winded, you know, who am I? But if I go back and say, you know, my life was really, I played every sport. I was a diver, and, you know, that took that very seriously for a few years. I was a tennis player, a baseball player, football player, basketball and golf and all that stuff. So, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, but like I've played it all.
Played it all. Well, and played at a collegiate level. I mean, like
you
took it far enough to play in college.
Yep, which was neat. Just I guess a quick background on that story. So I was a good high school player here. I was a All-State honorable mention. So I wasn't one of the top, you know, 10 guys or so in the state, but I was kind of, you know, I was on the radar, I guess. Yeah. But I was a late bloomer. So I was 6'1" and like, you know, 160, dripping wet.
Right.
Just didn't have any muscle on me at all. So anyway, I went on my mission. Yeah, I came home and I was closer to 6'3" and like 195. So I really filled out and got stronger. And so then when I came home, you know, I started playing pickup ball with a lot of guys that had played up at the U in previous years. A couple really well-known names, at least in Utah, Jeff and Britton Johnson. And so those guys are great friends and guys that I look up to. And anyway, we were playing, you know, just pick up ball a couple times a week. They asked me where I was playing next year. And I said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, where are you playing college basketball? And I'm like, oh, I don't have any plans, you know. And they're like, oh, well, you're good enough to not just be on the team, but you're good enough to play up at the U and get playing time. And they said something that really resonated with me and has turned into like a, it was a mantra and still is a mantra, but they said, you'll regret it the rest of your life if you don't at least try. Yeah, that's one of my life mottos. It's like one of my number one things is no regrets. And that just kind of, that actually came from my older brothers. They went on a trip to Newport Beach, actually. And so they were staying in Whittier, California, which is a good hour drive from the beach.
Yeah.
And they woke up super early every morning to just go body surfing and just like make the most of that trip. They were only there a couple days.
Yeah.
And my oldest brother, Tom, said to my other brother, Mike, like, hey, dude, get out of bed. We got to go. No regrets. We're going body surfing. And the way that they talked about that, they told me that. And I'm like, yes, I want to do that.
I want in
on that. So
yeah.
So no regrets really has, you know, has become a life mantra for me. Fast forward to the basketball story. So I started working out pretty hard and trying to get my game ready, knowing that my only chance would be to walk on. Because, you know, yeah, I was off the radar at that point. You know, I'd been serving a mission.
Yeah, I mean, a recommendation from another player doesn't mean a whole lot if they can't back it up. So you got to
right
take your shot.
For sure. So by rule, every Division I school has to hold an open tryout, but they don't have to take anybody. This was the first year of a new coach, Ray Giacoletti. So I think there were probably more people than there otherwise would have been because they felt like, oh, it's a new guy, you know.
Maybe there's
so you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah.
And so I went, everything was just supernatural and it was great. And within the first 10, 15 minutes of the tryout, the coach pulled me aside and he said, I need you here. You know, what are you doing at 2:30? And I said, nothing. He's like,
nothing now.
We need you at practice. We want you on this team. And I'm just like, I could not believe it. But those were long days in college, man. I mean, yeah, you go to your classes and then you try to eat what you can, and then you're
running it all off.
Then you're running, oh, totally. Like, yeah, he could not keep weight on during that. But so my freshman year, we had an unbelievable team. We ended up winning 29 games. So we went to the NCAA tournament, and we won our first round game against UTEP. We won our second round game against Oklahoma, and we lost in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky. But to get to the Sweet 16 was just like an out-of-body experience. Whoa. It was unbelievable.
Well, as a walk-on.
Totally. I mean, so I got playing time as a walk-on freshman, which was awesome. I started a game. So I had like this really cool story. But then the next year I got a scholarship, and I became a starter for all the conference season games, which was about half of the season. So I had a scholarship the remainder of the deal. And then my senior year, I was a captain, which was a nice honor. You get voted by your peers, your teammates. So I kind of had that unique story of like, okay, here's an opportunity. And then, you know, what can you do with it? I wasn't as talented as a lot of the guys there. They're more athletic and better players than I was. But I did have, you know, some level of success where I went from, you know, nothing to something. I really learned a lot through that process and that kind of no regrets mentality.
Right.
Hearing it from guys who'd been there really had an impact on me. If somebody else would have said that, I would have just thought, well, I mean, what do you know?
Right.
But when Jeff and Britton said, you know, you'll regret it if you don't at least give it a shot. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, why not? I'm going to do this. And I did. It was fun.
So what did you major in college?
I don't remember. No, I'm just kidding.
That's not the important part for sure.
I got a Bachelor of Arts in marketing.
Okay.
Yeah. But truthfully, what I remember of college was, and the real lessons of college were all hoops related. I was a better teammate on the court than I was maybe in the classroom. And, you know, I love learning. Like, I spend a lot of time learning now, but in that period of time, like, wasn't there for school as much as, yeah, as much as I was there for basketball.
There was other learning to be had, and totally, you were taking advantage of it was what all was available.
Life lessons, teamwork lessons, all that kind of stuff, you know, the accounting stuff, I don't remember, you know, but you can learn all that later anyway.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to take a bit of a break for a sweet message from a podcast supporter.
This podcast is inspired by the Oliver Fund. Thanks for listening.
We talked about you being a playful and curious person just kind of throughout life, totally, right? Sounds like your family culture was totally playful.
Yeah.
Right?
It was work hard,
work ethic,
play hard.
But also the play ethic is there too. Like, this matters.
Yes.
We want to prioritize this.
Totally.
Right? So in your own family now, how does that translate?
My favorite part of being a dad is just being playful with the kids. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, they know that's who I am. I'm just a big kid at heart. And so here's a good story. So my favorite days coming home from work are when they're, you know, the lights are turned off and there's a Nerf gun at the base of the of the door into the house and a note that says, you know, Daddy, we dare you to come get us, you know, it's on.
Yeah.
And so I love it. You know, I get in there and, you know, they're quiet as a mouse and I have to go find them and shoot them.
Is it everybody? Is this Tara too?
This is everybody.
This is everybody.
Yeah. So everybody's, Tara's trying to help them find a good spot to hide, to ambush me, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I have to sneak in there all stealth and spy tech and all that type of stuff. And I don't know where they're at. Yeah. So I have to sniff them out. And then it just turns into, you know, full on war for a good solid 30, 40 minutes when I get home. And that's just the best.
Playful culture, you got that down.
Yes.
Okay, love to learn. Let's talk about that side.
Okay.
Okay, so what do you find are your best inputs, I guess, for learning?
For learning?
Yeah, as an adult.
Well, so some of the things that I do to learn right now in my life, you know, I read a ton or try to read a ton, and that's, you know, I'm reading about stuff I want to learn about, and, you know, you don't do that in school. And
that's true.
You know, for better or for worse, you kind of just follow along with the curriculum of the class or whatever. But now, you know, I've read some amazing books in the last 3, 4, 5 years, and it's incredible. But
like, do you have some recommended?
I've kept a list of all the stuff that I've read over the last little bit. But yeah, okay. Here's a couple of book recommendations. One is called Essentialism. And basically the premise of the book is it's the disciplined pursuit of less.
Right.
And I'm a huge proponent of that, even though I'm like have a million different hobbies and things like that. But if you want to, if you really want to be good at something, you have to limit the distractions and all the stuff that just doesn't matter and focus on what's truly essential.
What actually, you know, is bringing you that joy. And I mean, I think a million different hobbies falls into the category of essentialism if you know why you do them.
Right.
Right. If you're just doing it to fill time or doing it to avoid something, it's no longer essential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Is that's the one by Greg McKeown?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. One of my favorite books of all time is The Fountainhead. By Ayn Rand. If you haven't read that book, it's unbelievable. It basically tells the story of two different people. It's kind of a story about architecture, but it's Peter Keating, and then Howard Roark. Peter Keating is the guy who went to the school with the recognition, name recognition, all that stuff, and he's the guy that really doesn't know who he is, but he does what everybody else wants him to do, and he gets a lot of praise for it,
mm-hmm.
right? And he gets a lot of recognition, but at his absolute core, he just doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know what his style is, and he doesn't have the same integrity and joy from doing what he does, because he's being driven by other people and not himself.
Yeah.
Contrast that with Howard Roark, who's, you know, Ayn Rand's basically definition of the perfect man, who is so true to himself and loyal to himself. He knows exactly who he is, what he's doing, why he's doing it. I just love that book. It was an amazing, amazing story. There's a book by David Epstein called Range, and it's Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And this has a lot to do with the value of play, because essentially is like you can draw from all these different and diverse experiences to be able to apply creativity and the lessons that you learn from something that could be totally different and apply it to a problem over in a different area. You know, being able to have that range and that diversity of experience, you know, and being able to apply that to different things, it really makes a huge difference. And you know, I think that's been an advantage for me with all the different sports that I've played.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty easy. It's a lot easier for me to pick up a new sport than somebody who's just been, you know, a baseball player and that's
yeah,
it.
Right.
Or whatever. Because I can draw from all these different, you know, all these different experiences and the feel and the touch and the, you know, that there's a ton of crossover
right,
and all these different things. So I just think, you know, there's so much benefit of range.
Well, and I feel like because children are absolutely adaptable,
mm-hmm.
right? You put them in a situation and they will adapt.
Yeah.
I mean, they may not adapt as we would prefer them to adapt, but they will find a way to make that situation stable for themselves,
yeah.
right? And I feel like there's a point where as adults we shun that adaptability in order to be stable,
mm-hmm.
when in reality we need to actually stay engaged with that adaptability. I feel like play does that. I feel like play makes it so that you become malleable for life experience.
What play does too is it gives you it gives you an opportunity to make mistakes in an environment that is not so cutthroat. And when you learn from your mistakes and you become better for it, think about how much that can apply to the things that are cutthroat and that do matter.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that, you know, that environment that is safe, and you know that you can make those mistakes and challenge yourself in a way to get better without it actually meaning life and death, that's huge. That's
yeah.
huge. And I think there's an advantage for people that, you know, take things or life seriously, but not themselves. And so play gives that to you. Sports give that to you. And I think, you know, I like to have that mindset where I can take something super seriously and put my competitive drive into it and intensity, but I don't have to take myself so dang seriously. And I can
right.
do things for the pure inherent joy that they give and be able to learn things along the way. And, you know, some of the things that I love to do the most are games that are really pretty tough. I mean, golf is as tough as it gets.
You'd always be better in golf.
Yeah.
It's like there's like no way to be absolutely perfect.
No, you can't.
In any game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even when you play your absolute best, you can still find a shot or two that you could have saved.
Yeah.
or improved upon. The other game that I've just recently taken up in the last year, year and a half is squash. And on at face value, it seems very, very simple. You know, but then as you challenge yourself and you get a little bit better and you start playing against better players, it becomes massively complex. And then the goal is, you know, at a certain point, you keep challenging yourself, you keep improving, you keep improving. You try to get to that simplicity after being in the forest of complexity. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, being able to challenge yourself again in a game.
Right.
But making progress, you know, that translates to everything in life. You learn how to understand adversity. You learn how to, you know, be mentally tough, physically tough. You kind of put yourself through demanding situations. You learn about opponents. You learn about people's tendencies. You learn about your own tendencies. Mm-hmm. And you learn all of this in an environment that is, you know, safe.
And then you can walk away and take your learnings with you.
Totally. Yeah. And the people that don't do well are the people that take it to an extreme.
Make it life or death, right?
Yeah. And, you know, if they don't play well, they're beating themselves up, and then, you know, pretty soon nobody wants to play with them anymore or something like that. Or
right.
Makes me think of Michael Jordan, you know, greatest basketball player who ever lived. He had a clause in his contract, and a lot of people don't know this, which allowed him to play basketball at any time, anywhere, any pickup game, didn't matter, which normally... You know,
are you limited usually in your NBA contract? So if you sign with the Lakers, you play only for the Lakers.
Right, because there's such risk of injury and so forth that, you know, they want to protect the players from
their investment in the players.
Exactly.
Too,
they're paying them a lot of money.
Yes, yeah.
But Michael Jordan had a clause in his contract called the "for the love of the game" clause, and it allowed him to play anywhere with anyone at any time. Not just Bulls, Chicago Bulls, basketball type stuff.
I did and not know that. That
totally.
Is fantastic.
And you think about, you know, it's that passion that he had and that love for the game that he had that drove him to be the best. And it's just like, you know, if we did more things just purely for the enjoyment and the love and the passion that you have for something, I think, you know, it'd be more fulfilling.
It would be more fulfilling for not just you, because I think Michael Jordan has been inspirational on so many levels. I mean, he just got up at Kobe's funeral, right? And said they played off of each other's inspiration because they were allowing themselves to love the same game.
And totally.
And I mean, he inspired some of the greatest players, and he's inspired just about every playground basketball game I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
For sure. No, that was really cool to see him yesterday. He inspired Kobe on the court. And then what's cool is that Kobe, the person, is what inspires Michael right now to be a better person, to be a better big brother, to be a better, you know, husband,
right.
father, and all that stuff, which, you know, it was really cool to see him get emotional and choked up about that. But that's what's so unique about Kobe and Jordan is that passion and that love that they had for the game, mm-hmm. you know, it was huge for them. There are things to act and there's things that are acted upon. And we all can be those that act. And Kobe was the perfect. He changed his number from 8 to 24. Because 24 represents 24 hours in a day, and it represents carpe diem. And that's kind of, you know, going back to my no regrets philosophy and mantra, you know, it really is about carpe diem. It's about making stuff happen and doing things because you love them. The Oliver Fund, this podcast, all that type of stuff. There's a lot of reasons why you could easily just say, no, I can't do that. But carpe diem, baby.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And here's another quick word from an adorable supporter.
This podcast is fueled by the Oliver Fund. You can find us on Instagram at the Oliver Fund and at Art of Play Podcast.
Let's talk about your legacy. What are you leaving behind?
So I have three mantras. One, no regrets, which we've covered. Two is stay stoked. And stoke, that's really like a surfer term. And, you know, there's just this joy of riding a wave that, that gives you stoke. Or, you know, skiers on a powder day or something like that. I mean, you you can't recreate that kind of feeling that is so pure, that is so much fun. And, you know, so stay stoked to me, means be happy and, you know, do the things that you love. But also, you know, if when you're around people and things like that, like, be happy. If you can take a rock out of their backpack and certainly not put one in there.
Right.
Or even if you can help them put down that backpack for a few minutes to play and do something fun.
Yeah.
And enjoy life for a minute, that's stay stoked.
Yeah.
You know, do the things that you need to do to be happy on a daily basis. I'm not big on holidays because they get so much fanfare and they get so much, everybody's up
on the holiday.
On the holidays.
Yeah. I'm the day before and after.
I'm a November 1st guy. Okay. I love November 1st and I love a Tuesday. I love to go, you know, the simple things for me mean a lot. I get stoked out of my mind to get a Mexican Coke, you know, with the pure cane sugar,
mm-hmm.
and put it in with big ice cubes, and I celebrate that Coke. And you know what? That could be the best part of my day, but I love that part of my day.
Right.
You know, go get your favorite slice of pizza, whatever. Like, just find out what you love and go and do it and be true to that. And I, you know, that's how I live my life. And my wife says, You're never sad. You're never upset. You don't have a bad day. And it's like, well, no, I don't. I mean, sure, some days are better than others. Well,
it's a life worth living to say there's shadow in the same picture.
Right.
But.
Right. No, but I truly get up for the little things all the time. So no regrets. Stay stoked. And then the third one is F it. I'm doing it. And there's a lot of reasons to say no to something, but this particularly relates to, you know, challenges and things that are hard or, things that aren't easy. And at a certain point in time, you know, you just really have to say, no, screw this. I'm gonna go do this, and I'm going to go make this happen. And, you know, there's a lot of fun with that. You got to have the intestinal fortitude to be able to actually do it and to not be afraid of it. So that's kind of my third mantra. But no, I think like I'm a big kid at heart. I really do love the everyday. So much of life is the grind, you know, and just being a part of the, you know, the carousel and like, okay. Yeah. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got their stuff and, you know, life's about way more than that. If you really stop and think about, okay, how do I want to be remembered? Which is what your question is. I mean, yeah. Do you have passion or do you not? Like, what do you love?
Yeah.
And who do you love? And if you can spend time doing those things and being with those people, that's a rich, rich life.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Straight as an arrow right there.
Simple.
Yep. Simple, straightforward.
Yeah.
We were just talking about if you broke your life down in decades, how is one decade more playful than another? You said no.
No, I've basically just played all my life.
Which is awesome.
Yep.
But then if you were to choose to go back and relive or redo any part of your life, would you choose to do that?
I would. Yeah. And the period that I would choose to redo would be high school, which sounds kind of weird because I wasn't like Mr. High School type of guy. Like I didn't.
You didn't peak in high school, is that what you're saying?
I guess you could put it that way. But no, I had a lot of fun in high school and whatnot. But there's one thing in particular that I would redo. One thing that I didn't dedicate a lot of time to in high school was dating. And I think there's a couple of reasons why. I feel like it was pretty, you know, I had way too serious of an approach to dating. And it wasn't just playful and fun and no big deal.
And about building the relationship outside of being
romantic. I felt
romantic.
Like there was this pressure to, like, you know, well, you can only really date girls that you could envision that you could marry. And so, you know, I did not really date that much or, you know, hang out with a really big group, diverse group of girls. Where this ended up hurting me is, you know, I did have a marriage that didn't work out. So the summer going into my senior year at the University of Utah, got married, and about 8 or so months later, it ended.
So before you graduated?
Before I graduated, yeah.
So you started your senior year.
Yep. And then by the time, you know, I think I moved out in March or something like that, and, you know, it all went like final in August. But for all intents and purposes, like, we were married from June until, call it, you know, February, March. So what, 8 or 9 months, yeah, something like that. But anyway, you know, she's a wonderful person. It just wasn't the right fit. And, you know, she's gone on to be happy and is happily married with kids, and I'm the same. But, you know, I feel like that maybe could have been avoided if I had more experience, you know, dating, and dating a bunch of different girls, and what do you like, yeah, what do you not don't like, and, you know, what's really important, and what are you looking for? And you know,
building relationships from,
yes,
yeah, for on either we're different in this way, but we're alike in this way.
Totally.
And how do we make that work? How do we,
yes,
come to a consensus about how we're going to act in this relationship?
I felt, you know, I guess a little unprepared, in a way. I mean, I didn't envision it happening that way, but, you know, I'm so grateful for that experience. And it really has been one of the best things that's ever happened to me because of what I learned from it, right? And going back to your legacy question, I want people to remember me as somebody who learned from their mistakes and got better. And I want to pass on to my kids, if you own your defeats, you'll be defined by your victories.
Yes.
So own those mistakes, learn from them, and be better from them. And so I feel like, you know, the greatest, you know, accomplishment, if you want to call it that, or the thing that I'm most proud of in my life now is that I married Tara, and, you know, and I was able to learn from my past experience of one that didn't go so well. With Tara, it actually turned out to be a very easy decision for me. And one of the, you know, definitely my happiest and most, so proud of this.
As an outsider whose opinion doesn't matter on that, I think you did very, very well.
No, I'm so grateful for her. And you know, she's the best thing that's ever happened to me. But I wouldn't have been able to recognize the things that I love so much about her if I hadn't have gone through that experience, yeah, and that, you know, quote unquote failure. But I think if I were to give advice to younger people, you know, you don't necessarily want to have to go through divorce to be able to figure out things
what
like
you want
that
in marriage. Yeah.
And I would just say, you know, in high school, as it pertains to dating and things like that, you know what, have fun. You know, don't take it so seriously, and don't take yourself so seriously. Right.
Yeah.
And that was probably my mistake, is I felt like, you know, if I was dating a girl, it had to kind of be a little too serious.
Yeah.
And, no, it's not a big deal. It's, and if somebody has a hard time getting over a breakup or whatever, it's going to be better for them in the long run,
yeah,
anyway, to be able to go through kind of that heartache and disappointment,
yes,
in an arena where, again, it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
I mean, high school doesn't really matter.
Right.
And I wish people understood that a little bit more. And, you know, I wish I understood that a little bit more on the dating front.
Okay. My last question.
Sure.
Is how do you leave people with that spark of joy? I mean, like, is there something, let's say you're on the golf course, you get that lemon of a client that really won't crack open, right? Let's just say I'm sure you've had. Oh,
totally. Totally.
A few.
More than a few. You know, I don't know. I think you know, there's only so much that you can control. And you can't control other people. But I think in that instance, you know, something like that I said earlier, if you can take a rock out of that backpack that they're carrying around, or if you can at least convince them to put the backpack down for a second, I think you've done some real work.
I just want to thank Chris for taking the time to come and be interviewed today. As a quick recap, being someone who plays comes really naturally to Chris, as you can tell, but he is very aware of how he got where he is now, and I feel like his reflections on that are highly productive for those of us who maybe didn't have that experience with sports and playing our whole lives. He believes in cultivating a culture in his family that relies on curiosity and learning and connection. And I love his three mantras of no regrets, stay stoked, and F it, I'm going for it. So just in case you also wanted the books he recommended first Essentialism by Greg McKeown, second The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand, and third Range by David Epstein. Chris is an excellent motivator, and it was awesome to take some time and chat with him, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. We'll see you next Friday to kick off your weekend with a little bit of play. This podcast is fueled by my family's mission at the Oliver Fund. You can find us online at theoliverfund.org or on social media at The Oliver Fund and at Art of Play Podcast.